Rocco can address the Tiger Grant aspect of this project as well. So, and then I'll come back up and we'll address the next stages.
I'd just like to make one footnote, which is the other thing we'll be looking at, in addition to cooperating with the other transit entities and transportation entities, is thinking about what are the criteria and the standards that were used. And the governor was very clear, I think, with the new directors when we were appointed, he wanted us to look at the green aspect of what we do, how we can use innovative technologies to be able to relieve congestion, but also reduce pollution in that process. So that's the other dimension.
If I say anything to rile up this section of the crowd, please hold your fire. It's not often that people leave when I start to speak, but we draw the cop. But that's good. I'm happy with that. All right, let's see if I embarrass myself, because I'm sure I will. It won't be the first time nor the last time. Yep. There we go. Okay, 294.57. I'm going to give you a little bit of an update on this project. Give me an overview. I'm going to do this very, very high-level overview. We've talked about this for many, many years, but just to kind of step back and educate the board a little bit about this project. The project involves the construction of a new interchange between two existing interstates, Interstate 294 and I-57. It's the big X. The easiest way to see it is always an X, with nothing connecting the two interstates. The project is located in South Cook County in the communities of Posen, Markham, Robbins, Dixmoore, Harvey, Edmund Lothian, and there's many other communities surrounding the entire area that are affected by the overall project: Blue Island, Calumet City, Homewood, and the list goes on. The project includes about a 3-mile segment of both Interstate 294 and I-57, basically to make this connection. And the entire area around the interchange consists of a mix of different land uses: residential, commercial, industrial, and some major conservation areas, which you could actually see on this map, everything in yellow. Completed in 1958, the tollway was originally designed, as we know, as a bypass around the city of Chicago, and with a limited number of interchanges along the route. Several years later, in the mid-1960s, I-57 was built, basically as one of the next roadways radiating out of the city of Chicago. When I-57 was built, no connection to Interstate 294 was provided. Nobody really had that vision at that point in time that there would be any need to connect these interstates. Shame on them. So we're stuck with this one, and have been for a while. It is one of the last remaining locations in the entire United States where you have two interstates that cross and just do not connect. So throughout the years, there's been a lot of population growth and development, and they've really overtaken the area and generated more of a need for increased access between these two facilities. Especially now that there's more suburban-to-suburban commuter patterns out there now. The combined average daily traffic, we call it ADT in the industry, exceeds about 200,000 for both 294 and 57 combined. That's today, and in the year 2030, so 20 years from now, it's going to exceed 300,000. So there's going to be a lot more growth that's projected. Traffic currently utilizes the existing arterial systems, 159th Street, Kedzie, 127th Street, to the north, Pulaski, or Crawford, to really make this connection to Interstate 80, which is just off the map. So there's some out-of-direction travel. So as Mike has alluded to, and Director Rolfe could attest to this too, this project has a long history. Since about 1993 is when it started. My personal experience on the project dates to about that time too. And I think the first time I ever met Director Rolfe was probably sometime in the mid-1990s. Talking about this project then, and others, so there has been a history. But when originally envisioned, this was a very simple connection of a project. We were just looking to provide a connection between southbound 294 to southbound I-57 and the reverse. It was conceived as a means to provide access to a third airport, which is still out on the planning horizon, but also, most importantly, from the tollway perspective, to improve operations at the 163rd Street Toll Plaza. If you drive on the South Tri-State now, to get to Interstate 80 or I-57, you've got to go through the cash side or the manual side of the plaza. So what we had back then was basically a big, long backup from the cash side of the plaza into the mainline lanes. We have since implemented some I-pass only lanes. You can't use the open road tolling lanes to make that connection because the proximity of the mainline toll plaza and the interchange is too close. It's kind of at the tail ends of our system. We got this that happens. So anyway, what this was originally envisioned as a very simple project. Throughout the years, we've worked with Federal Highway Administration. We've done a lot of workshops and talked to the locals. And what has now grown into a very complex project. Sometime back in the mid-90s or so, the Federal Highway Administration said, no, you just can't provide access between these two movements. We require that you look at all movements. So back, and I think it was probably mid-90s, 96, is when they required us to step back and look at evaluation of the full interchange evaluation. So it really changed the way we were thinking. So that's kind of where we step back in 93. Again, there's a long history. I mean, I could go back to the glacial periods when it goes back to Glacial Lake Chicago if we want on this one. But no need to do that for a geology lesson. Some of the quick highlights of what we've done really to date, more recent activities. I think most importantly, as Mike started talking about this, in 2007, the Tollway Board added funds for this project as part of our congestion relief program, our current congestion relief program. There's $46.5 million in our current program for this project. The funding for this project was really originally intended to be the tollways match to a potential federal state split. Federal government was to provide 80% of the project, and the match was going to come between both the tollway and IDOT, which was about $46 to $50 million per agency. So we put in $46.5 million in our program for this particular project. Federal funding is still yet to emanate on this project. Most recently, throughout 2008 and 2009, we've conducted environmental engineering studies, and now we have Federal Highway Administration approval on portions of the document. We're still doing some updates. In 2009, the Tollway Board took another action, and through the Congestion Relief Program 2, included about $500 million for these 294-57 interchange. Obviously, the program is still on hold. 2009, the current IDOT is now leading the project. IDOT, since probably about early 2009, they've taken the lead on the project to continue on with some additional environmental and engineering studies, primarily for improvements along 147th Street. They've done some value engineering studies. They've also updated the environmental assessment, and now they are currently in contract plant preparation phases. So that's kind of a brief project history, as brief as you can be on this project. So what does this project really look like? What I try to do is provide a map to show that there are four distinct movements as part of this overall project. One that I've always called the to and from Champaign movement, because that was the easiest way to always describe it, what you see in blue. It's providing the connection between southbound 294 to I-57. Anybody who drives down from anywhere up in the northern or northwestern suburbs or anywhere in this area knows everybody has their own backdoor way to get to make that connection to I-57, because that's how you want to get to Champaign. So one of the primary movements would be what you see in blue, the to and from Champaign movements. One of the other movements is what we call the O'Hare movements. It's basically providing the connection between southbound I-57 to northbound 294 and southbound 294 to northbound I-57, which you see here in green. Next movement would be the next big interstate-to-interstate connection would be the Chicago movement. So that would be the northbound 294 to northbound I-57 and southbound I-57 to southbound I-294, shown here in red. And the last movement is a local interchange improvement, or providing new access to 147th Street, basically to and from the north. So it would be southbound 294 to allow you to get off at 147th Street, also known as Illinois 83, and getting on from 147th Street to northbound I-294. So collectively, all these movements make up the entire project. But the greatest volume, and as I said, the project where we originally conceived of the need for this were the blue movements, the to and from Champaign movements. So as you can see, it has evolved quite significantly from those early days. Brief on the project status. As I said, IDOT continues to lead the project. They're coordinating with Federal Highway Administration to update the environmental and engineering work. There's a public hearing that's planned for next week. In Posen, the public hearing is on February 4th at the Posen Community Center. The intent of this public hearing is to discuss some of the value engineering findings. Value engineering is basically when you look at a project to say, okay, what kind of changes can we make to maintain the overall integrity of the project, but what can we do to maybe reduce the cost of the project? So there were some value engineering changes that, and I'll discuss a little bit of those later. So that's the intent of this public hearing, is to go over these value engineering improvements to the general public, the FHWA requirement. IDOT is also continuing with the Phase 2 contract plan preparation. Basically, the project will be ready for construction within this year. In the next couple months, there will be some contracts. IDOT is going to be letting what we call advanced construction, which is basically they had some necessary bridge improvements that were needed regardless of the interchange at I-294 and I-57, the bridge, I-57 bridge over 294 and the I-57 bridge over Kedzie Avenue. They were in such a state of repair that they needed some improvements. So instead of just doing the basic repairs, the IDOT projects will actually be able to accommodate any future interchange. So it's on the June letting, and construction is going to be starting sometime in August. So this is kind of a kickoff to this project. As I said, there were some recent changes within the past couple weeks that really altered some of the value engineering recommendations. There were about 20 different value engineering recommendations that came out of the review process. So it actually kind of lowered the cost a little bit, and this is the intent of everything we do. We identified savings of about $25 to $30 million, so the project cost now has come down to about $570, $580 million. It's still subject to change because as you get closer and closer to that finish line, you get more information and you take out some of the unknowns. Some of these savings that were identified as part of the value engineering, there was a reconfiguration of some of the ramps to make sure that all access was still provided, but we shortened up some of the bridges. And not just shortening the bridges, they made the construction altogether a little bit simpler. So when you make the construction simpler, you make the bridges a little simpler design, you get some savings in that. We also were able to reduce some of the right-of-way and thus some of the right-of-way impacts. So overall, we had a lower construction cost. When you have a lower construction cost, you also get lower engineering and construction management costs. So overall, we've seen about, like I said, about $25 to $30 million of savings through this value engineering process. So some of the current funding, where are we with this? Because this is what's really important. IDOT currently has $50 million that can go towards construction. They've got $16 million appropriated in the current program for engineering. That engineering work is ongoing. As I said, the tollway, we've got $46.5 million in our current program. There's $2.4 million of federal funding that is currently available for the project. That was an award that was given to the South Suburban Mayors and Managers Association several years back for this particular project to go towards right-of-way or whatever it might be. And as Mike also said, we've got a Tiger Grant request out there. Don't know what the Tiger acronym stands for, but it's a $300 million grant request that we have to the federal government for funding for this project. Announcements will be sometime. What we were originally told was February 15th, so very, very soon. We're very hopeful that we'll get some funding for this project. But we also have to look at other sources of funding. We've always talked about this. This is such a large project. One agency alone can't tackle this thing. So we have to look at maybe possibilities of federal reauthorization. We've submitted appropriation requests over the last several years for this particular project. We've got to look at local funding, possibilities for private funding, or whatnot. So we've got to try to identify some options. But that's the available funding. So right now there's about $100 million available for this project. So we've got to look at the what-if scenarios. What if we get some Tiger funding for this project? What if we only have $100 million? We need to think, what do we do at that point in time? If we were to get $300 million from Tiger, it still is $270, $280 million short of the overall project need. Is that something that the tollway and IDOT collectively combine and finish funding the project? What if we only get partial funding from Tiger? What if we don't get any Tiger funding? We still have $100 million towards this project. So we've got to start thinking about these what-if scenarios. So one of the things that we can consider, and we started talking to Federal Highway Administration about this, and it's ultimately going to require their approval, and we have to do some traffic analysis on this, but can we do a phase construction? Like I said, there are four very distinct movements. Is that a possibility to start phasing in construction over time using whatever funding is available for each one of these movements and try and prioritize those appropriately. We would do some additional traffic analysis to show Federal Highway Administration what the impact would be. You don't want any unintended consequences. Federal Highway Administration is always concerned about partial interchanges because the driver expects, when you come to an interchange, a full access interchange. As we see many partial access interchanges across our entire system, the driver expectation is what Federal Highway Administration is most concerned with. So they're expecting a financial plan and a traffic analysis to show what would happen. So at some point in time, we'll be coming to the board to look for some direction on what to do. So within the next couple weeks, we'll find out more about this Tiger program. And then one of the next things after we get this direction, one of the first things we'll have to do is start moving on acquiring some of the right-of-way for the project. It'll take about 12 to 18 months to acquire the right-of-way, and we'll have to come to the board for approval to set up a budget to acquire that right-of-way. So with Mike walking up to my shoulder, I am wrapping up.
Well, he didn't leave. He stayed for the presentation. Could you, I'm only going to take a minute because I want to point out something here. Because of the scope of this project, if you'd use the left side of the clicker and go back to the...
That would be the right side.
There you go. You've defined four specific movements here, and what you're talking about in the phased possible situation is which one of those, or perhaps which two of those, may make the most sense and which would provide greater access to our system as well as to the interstate. I guess I would suggest one thing. When you see the lengths of the colors of yellow in particular at 147th Street and how that impacts the local communities, I think as we look at the movements, we have to look at what takes truck traffic and other types of traffic out of the communities from a quality of life perspective. So I hope that's part of this. And two, to just understand, when you see the range of those colors, this is no ordinary interchange. When you think of $570 million plus minus, the scope of this thing is extraordinary. And we need to be mindful of that as we try to work through this. And all of the communities that are in and around this location are very, very supportive of this. And I'm sure your meeting in Poston next week will demonstrate that.
To answer the question on the some of the priorities to take the interstate traffic off, we would say, you know, the number one from a demand standpoint will always be the Champaign Movement Loop. It carries the most amount of traffic. So that really gets the trucks, gets the people to make that connection of really kind of where they want to go, one of the most logical movements. The O'Hare movements, obviously that's from an economic standpoint, that is a major economic generator through this area, O'Hare Airport, and providing that access to the, for lack of a better, the Blue Island industrial zones up through there. And because in Blue Island you've got a significant amount of rail, you've got water freight traffic through there, and you've got a lot of truck traffic that goes through Blue Island, through 127th Street and that network roadway through there. But those, the green lines, the O'Hare movements, that's another good priority movement. What that also does, it does relieve some of the pressure off of the yellow movements, the local access interchange, because what you could do, if I could point this out, coming off the interstate, although not a direct connection, you'd be able to come off the interstate, as Tom were here, you could point it out, oh no, actually we could do this, come off the interstate and get right here to 147th Street, which if you watch it, it's kind of comes very loud over here. So in some respects, it's not the direct connection to 147th Street, but you can do it, and vice versa, coming off 147th Street, instead of getting on here, you would just get on this way. You know, obviously the Chicago movements, those are T2, but some of those movements are lighter volume, and the local access interchange to local access interchange. So what we have talked to the feds about, and the Federal Highway Administration about, is that considering the 147th Street is almost a standalone project, which helps us to some degree, but then from an economic development standpoint, you want access into a community and out of a community. Right. So.
One of the primary reasons we brought this project to you now is because the deadline for response from FHWA on Tiger Grants is February 20, 15, in which they had committed that they would give responses to grant requests. So since that'll happen before the next board meeting, we wanted directors to be informed of where we were on it, and suggest that depending on what comes out from that decision, because the other aspect of that Tiger Grant application was that if it is partial, if it's not $300 million, it's some lower dollar amount than that, they also have the ability to tell us to that we're green-lighted on the phased construction. So there may be some changes that come from the Tiger Grant decision that we would want to be able to discuss with you, and that will certainly become very important in the communities and the stakeholders that have been involved in this project for a decade or two. So it'll become fodder once we know more about it, and we want to make sure you were up to speed on that project. Good. With that in mind, this is just the first of many projects that have been on the minds of so many of our customers and board members. So next month we are hoping to lay out for you I-90 and the needs and the outcomes of many discussions we've had with RTA and Metra and PACE for what the future is of that corridor. As Paul has alluded to numerous times, that is our oldest stretch of roadway and one of our heaviest trafficked. We are now looking at the dollars we outlined for that project in the coming years of this current plan are significant, and that is just a patch. So as we look at a 50-year-old stretch of pavement, bringing up and putting before the board explanations of what it would take to rebuild and widen that, or what the other public discussions are around the Star Line or bus rapid transit solutions, and incorporating transit into the broader tollway, to the chair's point earlier, which is transit and greener solutions are top of mind in this planning process. So we will bring to you a broader discussion and more information on I-90 at the February board meeting, as well as an overall view of the planning that the tollway is looking at for future projects.
In that overall planning and view, I assume you'll go back to the resolution that we passed in December of 2007 to look at those different areas in the region and review those, and just think it's important that people know we're still looking at those things, from extending north into Lake County to the Ileana Expressway to Western Access and all of the other things that we've talked about historically, because all of those were in that resolution, and they were all subsequently, as I understand it, given the green light by Springfield.
Yeah.
In terms of, yes, please do look at these because you have the capacity and the capability, and the timing is good in that regard, because if you look at the economic engine this agency has been over the last 5.5 years, we're now in a position where we've dropped from $1.1 billion, $1.2 billion down to $350 to $400 million in projects going forward. We've demonstrated we can handle that, so the timing on this is really good.
And we will, the December 07 resolution reflects our legislatively identified projects for which we can review. And it's everything from the extension of 53 to there was a south extension of 355 to the Elgin O'Hare to all the projects that are on the docket in the state, as well as the projects that we recognize are important to our system, its interchanges, and that kind of those kind of projects as well. And we'll bring all of those forward for review. The same kind of thing that led up from the maturity of that process starting in 07. So thank you. Are there any questions?
I just think it's important that at some point we get a comprehensive report of what our share could be. This is kind of like taking a kid to the department store and saying, I want everything. And while we do want to help every area we can, I think in Mike's budget in 2 or 3 years, we're going to be pinched a bit ourselves. If this one's going to be short a couple $100 million and we might have to pick that up, I'm not sure that I'm prepared today to vote for a toll increase for a particular project here and another one there. So I think at some point we need to get realistic numbers and what our share could be, so we have a full understanding, because while we do want to try to keep the economic engine going, I don't want to do that at the expense of a gigantic toll increase for projects that while nice, may not be something we can afford. And I think we have to be careful about implying that all of these projects are in the pipeline when, in fact, they might not happen. Now, Mayor Weisner and I, they are meeting with the mayor who is at Hawking Estates, who's been insisting on a meeting with us as new board members to talk about why they need an interchange on this, and we started researching. There's like 40 requests for new interchanges on the whole system. So, like, if we take care of this guy, then what happens to this lady over here? So we really somehow need a comprehensive understanding, because at some point we as a group need to sit down and say, well, you know, what's real, what's not real, what kind of increases, because I don't, at least in this economy, I don't think the toll increase is a plot.
And that's exactly what this process is about, to identify what projects are discussed about, are discussed and asked for. We have a responsibility to respond to our communities and assess real costs and maturity. Is this something that we can afford or we can't afford? What are the real impacts of doing it? And is there an appetite, where there's an appetite with our board to move forward?
And so, just one footnote to that, it does relate to the other agencies, because some of these things are coterminous or have a nexus mm-hmm. with IDOT. So, and that we've been waiting for, and I'm sure soon we'll get a memo which lays all of this out. What we didn't want to do is wait to talk about this one, because the Tiger Grant decision may come down, and we didn't want the board to be surprised when we needed to act or respond to that. But
no, that's
looking
good, but
for
I would hate to say, oh yeah, let's do this and let's add $50 million because we want to make it work, and then we come along and say, well, these other seven projects now are going to
exactly
be done
right.
in 2065.
And I think going back to the 07 resolution, but also putting together this menu of everything that's out there, the SUD and IDOT, will give us a better view of that, and then see how it fits with the Metro or the RTA or the CMAP vision of this whole transportation system.
And with all of these, this brought up two meetings ago, we ought to be doing, if we do something like this, some type of environmental reclamation like we did up in North Chicago just recently with the and figure something out so that whether it's a small green space or improved drainage or whatever, I think, you know, everything we do, especially in Rocco's world, we ought to also look at that, because I think you've established a pretty good track record in that area, and I would hate to see that backslide, and that ought to be budgeted into the program. So when we're done, it actually might contribute. You know, if we're putting all that bad stuff in the cars in the atmosphere, maybe it wouldn't hurt to have a little green to absorb them.
That has been a part of our planning efforts, and we'll continue to do so. This goal is really just to have a very transparent dialogue about where the projects are, and to understand if there's even a decision that needs to be made because it's so far off. Or if a decision can be made, at least we know where it's going.
But you're resurfacing projects that you reviewed on this particular slide, embody within that the idea of reuse of asphalt shingles and everything else to keep that recycling and continued effort. So it's just important to restate that.
And the other point is the reduction of congestion is probably as big, mm-hmm. Angela, a reduction of pollution as some of these other physical projects that we do, so to keep the cars moving.
Right.
Yeah. On a very practical level, the work that you finished up in Lake County, it is pretty amazing. A couple times that I've been out there, even at rush hour now, it's moving at a minimum of 45 to 50 miles an hour with those extra lane configurations. And that, I think, gives people a better bang for their buck. And those kind of things are very important. It's like night and day difference when you see it now. And I'm hoping it's not because of high unemployment, people aren't on the road. But the reality, it does seem to move quicker and more smoothly. And that combined with the iPass system, probably for the trip I take here, which is 50 miles, I probably pick up 7 or 8 or 9 minutes, which is pretty significant.
We've heard that from many customers, and we're happy with the result.
Yeah. Okay, let's move along.
And I'm sorry if we can move to another quick I won't push quick, but presentation from Captain Jesnick. Again, District 15 is part of our family here, but often isn't. Here is one of the department heads, so especially for our new directors, one of you all to have a sense of how they fit into the tollway.
Good Good morning. My name is John Jesternick, and I'm very honored to be able to give this presentation about District 15. With me today are four of our five lieutenants from District 15. The closest one to me, Lieutenant Cindy Benson. Next to her, Manny Marquez, then Bridget Bertrand, and Patrick Kimes. Our fifth lieutenant, Joanne Gumbs, is in Springfield working on a training session on leadership, so she couldn't be with us today. The mission of the state police is to promote public safety, to improve the quality of life. In District 15, we do accomplish that mission on our 286-mile roadway. We are the largest district in the state police and clearly the most unique of the 21 districts. First of all, we have a sworn head count of 196 officers. Currently, we're at 192. Just the 15th of this month, we lost one of our officers to a stroke while off duty at the young age of 43 years old. We are the only district with its own investigation team, which helps us tremendously. We also are the only district that has dual reporting. We report not only to the state police chain of command, but to the tollway as well. In order to manage this very large district, we separated into geographic zones. Zone 1 is I-88. Zone 2 is the South Tri-State, which goes from Indiana to roughly the Cermak Road Toll Plaza. Zone 3 is the North Tri-State, which goes from Cermak almost to Wisconsin. Zone 4 is the Jane Addams I-90 going from O'Hare to Rockford. And Zone 5 is Veterans Memorial 355. We also have a special operations team that we're very proud of. It is encompassed by a team of commercial vehicle enforcement officers. Also, we have a North and South special enforcement team. If you'll notice there, the North team has two canine officers and the South team has four motorcycle officers. While they do say North and South, our special operations is a district-wide unit.
Are the canines in the pension system as well?
No. Not at this point. We love them, though. We love them. Each zone is comprised of three teams, and we call our district Team 15, and we call each of our subunits a team, and that's because we have a strong team mentality. Each team is supervised by a master sergeant, a sergeant, and 5 to 8 troopers. With three teams per zone, we have one on days, one on evenings, one on midnights, and these resources give us 24/7 coverage. This is shows our table of organization. Our executive secretary, Jeannie Beach, does a tremendous job keeping everything afloat. We have a team of 17 civilian employees that do a lot of the support services things, entering citations, helping with payroll and the like, and they're very effectively managed by Greg Georgellis. We also have, that doesn't include, which is not on our table of organization, our call takers and our telecommunicators, which actually report to engineering, but they are a key integral part to what we do. Administration and investigations is supervised by Patrick Kimes. Our operations side of the house is supervised by Cindy Benson. We have three lieutenants, each of them in charge of two zones. Zone 1 and 2 is supervised by Bridget Bertrand. Zone 3 and 4 by Manny Marquez. Zone 5 and special operations by Joanne Gumbs. I mentioned we're the largest state police district. We're also one of the youngest state police districts. If you notice here, our average tenure for a trooper is just under 7 years. Over a third of our district has less than 3 years on the job. Over half has less than 5 years on the job. As a matter of fact, just last year, we got a cadet class with 35 people that came to District 15. Very young. And that's why we count on our supervisors to properly coach, train, and mentor those officers. Accomplishments. We're obviously, and we've talked about this before, extremely proud of the first accomplishment. Only 9 people had died in 2009 on our roadways and traffic crashes, which is an absolutely phenomenal number. The year before was 19, and in at least 2 years that I can think of from looking at data, over 40 people had died. So that's an absolutely phenomenal number. We're not satisfied.
The number we want is zero, and we're going to work collectively to get there. Also, you can see that we've been recognized as a district. Also, individual officers within District 15 have been recognized for doing great work. One of the initiatives that we're very proud of is a collaborative effort between us and the tollway, where we have a number of seatbelt or child safety seat details. Just last year, we did 20 details, which was very good, and we want to keep those young children safe. We also have a traffic safety team that was developed earlier in 2009, and our team is comprised of officers of all ranks, all zones, all shifts. They meet monthly internally, and then we meet with Adam Littner's traffic safety team, and then we meet with John Benda's team. And it's been an absolutely phenomenal collaborative effort between us and the tollway staff, whether it's talking through signage issues, how we can more effectively deploy our resources, or maybe some engineering things. And it's touted so well that when we brought this up to our senior command, they have directed other areas of the state police to have similar type of collaborative teams with IDOT and county and local entities. The future. Obviously, we said we're not going to be satisfied until we have zero people dying on our roadways, and we're going to continue to strive to improve in those areas. And also, those are some key areas. That's not just a district initiative, that's a statewide initiative. As you can see, any of those particular categories are serious categories that we want to make sure that we stay on top of. With that, any questions?
Just a comment. I mean, the number for 2009 being nine people, when you think of 1.4 million vehicles a day on this system, is an incredible accomplishment. And it isn't for any other reason other than you all are visible. And working with the team that you put together, and John Benda and the like, and Adam, that safety collaboration is so critical when you think of the amount of activity on this system every day. So congratulations.
And thank you, sir. And something to add to that is, it isn't just us, it's all of us. I mean, whether it's a toll collector talking, pointing out a DUI, whether it's some engineering improvement that's made to the roadway, whether it's a help truck or maintenance, fixing a pothole or pulling someone off the roadway. I mean, this clearly is a team effort. This is not just a District 15 thing. This is a tollway thing.
I'd like to add to that, not only was that accomplished with all that traffic, but it was also accomplished during a lot of construction under the CRP program, which was taking drivers in along routes that weren't a straight line. And I think the signage, the rerouting, all those efforts during that construction period was absolutely amazing, and I think the proof is in the pudding in the sense that there were so few fatalities.
Thank you.
I'd just like to take this opportunity to
give you some new cars.
Thank you. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank the tollway board, thank the tollway staff for the absolutely tremendous support that you give to District 50. Thank you.
Thank you and your command that you have here today. Stay young. It's a very important accomplishment.
Thank you very much. Lastly, I have just a couple of items to cover past discussions at the board meeting. Earlier this week, we sent an update of our memo recounting assets throughout the agency, everything from cars in last month's presentation to cell phones, to BlackBerries, to computers, and everything. So I wanted to see if there's any comments or discussions. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, please don't hesitate to contact me or Marlene. Vic has been working on it. Marlene just moved on me. Marlene has been working closely with all the departments to pull that together.
Madam Chair, I had asked for this information, and I think we need to direct senior management to really focus on this in light of both the economy and other things going on. It appears to me we have too many people taking home cars, which are costing us thousands of dollars a year. I'm very uncomfortable with lots of free iPasses floating around with employees. I think we need need to really look at that, because a lot of people can get to work without using it. And I don't know many jobs where the employer actually pays part of the cost of people to get to work. I mean, there's some tax breaks you can get from the feds. I just think we need to really examine that in detail and decide if these are really priorities. And I don't have a list of the 60-some vehicles that go home every night, excluding the state police. But we ought to take a look, and if they're only being used once or twice a month, maybe a pool vehicle can do just the same. If we could save several million dollars a year on these kinds of things, that can help us contribute to what looks like is going to be another massive capital program. So I'm very uncomfortable with, and I know Governor Quinn had made the transponders to employees a very big concern several months ago, and I think now that we have the data, I don't think we're prepared today to adopt the policy, but I think you should put together a task force of management and see if you can come back with a way to tighten down, because every vehicle we can take out of that, every transponder vehicle is $5,000 a year, roughly. The transponders could be a couple hundred dollars a year. I did some back of the envelope math, and the transponders to employees could be costing us literally tens of thousands of dollars a week. And in auditing 25 a month to make sure they're not abused, I think is probably a fairly weak system, and maybe we're better to reimburse people when they have to use the tollway to get to or from a business function on behalf of the tollway, rather than have these transponders floating out there. The temptation seems to me to be significant, and it is a cost. I mean, it's a cost that's being lost.
Mike and I had talked about this when we first saw the report, and he's agreed to pull together the senior management to look at this, to examine the policies, and to see if what we've done in the past makes sense going forward. So we'll come back to the board. But if you have specific questions about any of this, or suggestions of places that they should look, or comparable policies in other places that you think make sense, I think that would be helpful to give to him as we go forward. Okay?
We'll look forward to that. Other issue, last one to address is last month in the engineering, we brought a item to the board for a vote for renewal of our program management office services. That was before the end of the year. At the time, we have not yet received a conclusion from the policy procurement board to move forward with it. So we extended it 30 days. Initially, we have, since we still do not have a response from the PBB, they have suggested we extend it another 30 days. We are working closely with them. We have already closed out the issue and the disclosure concerns that we had voiced to you back in December. We have addressed those issues, and the governor's office has also been involved with it. We've been keeping everyone abreast of it. So,
is that something you do administratively, or do we have to approve 30 days?
We do administratively. We are not asking for an increase in the contract dollar amount, and HNTB has agreed to continue their existing services for another 30 days under, because they came under budget last year, that we're still operating under that dollar amount.
The memo, I kind of understood some of all of it. It appears there was somebody who might have been a registered lobbyist, and that was a no-no, and that's all being investigated, and it was. I just think that's, you know, that if they cross the line, they should get appropriate discipline. Number two is, if we are going from a billions and billions of dollar program to a much more modified program, why do we need to supplement Paul's operation with this outside at an extreme cost? I tried to figure out, after that problem we've had with some other contractors, you have a multiplier for the employee's salary and then for overhead and that. It seems like a lot of people that are up in Paul's area are these private contractors, and for paying them a multiplier, and we're also giving them a desk, we're also giving them a telephone and a pad of paper, maybe the multiplier should be brought down. The whole thing is, if we're scaling down, it seems to me that we may not need this service going forward, and we shouldn't get too comfortable with it. It is an expensive proposition. And then that other, the ethical conflict issue, I think we need some guidance on that, because if the individual was a registered lobbyist, that's against the rules.
And yeah, we've addressed it.
The first one has been addressed. And Paul, I don't know, maybe what we need to do is really have some in-depth analysis of what the additional engineers at? I mean, we had a good discussion about this in the last meeting. I don't want to take too much time now, but I think if there are other questions specifically you want to get information on, maybe
I just want to save some money.
Yes, that's fine. So let's look and see if there are places we can do that.
And I think part of the reason why we've been able to stretch their service through our existing contract without increasing the upper limit is because we have had a significant reduction in their staff, recognizing the fact that the program has a decreased need to service the program that we have. There's a decreased need to service that program.
Okay, thank you.
And that's it for my issues.
Okay, so may we turn to the consent agenda? We'll look at 5.1, which is the information technology. We have two items there. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? They're approved. 5.2 is finance. We have two of those. May I hear a motion?
Madam Chair, may I just, at the committee, there was an amendment to the resolution that's before the full board. And the resolution before the board will be amended to vest the chair with discretion to adjust the managing underwriter assignments to give consideration to Illinois presence of the firms to the extent allowed by law and consistent with the best interest of the tollway.
Thank you. That's the resolution, but we will get back to you and let you know what the decision is. Did I ask for a motion?
You did. So
okay, and a second. All in favor with
aye.
The amendment on the resolution?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you. On procurement, I think we can take all of these together, 5.3. I see no, on my agenda, no recusals. Okay, so we'll take 1 through 10. Can I hear a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All of those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, 5.4 is engineering. I think we can take 1 through 8. All, may I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, on 8, we have...
Actually, 9.
Eight.
Number 9. I think
I'm sorry, 9 is the one. Director Towns will abstain on this.
Also
right?
Move.
Okay, second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? 1 recusal. 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, Director Rolf will be abstaining on. May I hear a motion on that?
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, those are approved. And then 15 through 19, I see no refusals.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Those are approved. Turning to 5.5 on legal, we have on number 1, Director Wiseman has an abstention. So may I hear a motion on that?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? That's been approved. Then we can take 2 through 4. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, those have been approved. Thank you very much. I'm getting better. unfinished or what we call old business. This is item number 6.
Unfinished.
Anything there? Mm-hmm. Number 7 for new business. Anybody want to do anything there? So
we have a new business in the cafeteria.
We do have almost a new business in the cafeteria. I think what we should do is make a motion to go into executive session, but we'll do the audit committee first. Do you want to do that? And then we'll just pick up after the audit committee, take a break, and do an executive session as long as we're in the full board.
You mean adjourn this meeting, go into the audit committee and come back to the full board?
Do you want to come back into the full board meeting? Okay,
you know,
that's
fine. We have to do that. So
okay.
Do you want to break at this point and adjourn this meeting and go to the audit committee?
Yes.
Is that your preference?
Yes.
Then
okay.
I would suggest doing that.
Okay. May I have a motion?
Madam Chair, under unfinished or new business,
yes.
I'm not sure what the protocol is, but I would like to have a job description developed, executive director, a posting and a selection process to be initiated, so that we can begin that process during the next 30 days. And I don't know where we should do that or how we do that.
It was actually on the agenda for the executive session. We'll talk about that, but I appreciate your bringing it up, and we will talk about it in the executive session.
So we'll be adjourning
okay,
until
we'll be
after the audit committee.
We will adjourn this group until after the audit committee, and then we'll come back, and then we'll go into executive session, and then we'll adjourn, and then we'll come back, and then we'll adjourn again.
So
okay.
To adjourn.
Okay.
So we will do the audit committee now. Do you